We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, everybody? Happy Friday. Welcome to the Roto Grinders NBA morning grind. Late night here on Thursday. TJ Zworich and I are going to be breaking it down. What's going on, TJ? We have seen each other quite a bit. You had a busy Thursday.
Did. It's been on the expert survey, was on crunch time, now popping in here for some morning grind. And of course, we had a meeting earlier in the day as well. But I'm excited about it. You know, I went from crunch time straight to an Agents of Fandom live show talking about The Mandalorian for an hour and a half. And then it's a 30-minute episode. We talk about it for 90 minutes, just that kind of thing, normal people stuff. And now back here to the morning grind, ready to dive into Friday's slate. Got, as we speak, it's Thursday night. I got a couple maybe little sweats going. Hopefully get to make a little money tonight, but we'll see how it goes.
10 games is better than four. We're at that point of the season where value just keeps opening up like crazy. And I cannot wait for opening day in baseball. It's March Madness. I'm over this, you know, 9 min price guys to choose from. And I'm good. But I like the normal-ish slates because even when there's some tomfoolery with a couple of teams, you have, you know, maybe like two-thirds of a normal slate with a bunch of teams still playing for playoff positioning here as we enter March. And needless to say, we're going to just cut into it. We're going to start breaking it down. And if you like what you have, what we have to hear, you can check us out on the FanDuel Friday show where TJ and I will talk a little bit about FanDuel more specifically later on Friday afternoon. But without further ado, let's get to it because I'm sure if you're listening to this, you are probably on your morning drive ready to knock out Friday. And so are we. So there is one 7 o'clock game, TJ. It's Orlando and Charlotte. And really, the big news here, stemming from earlier this week, is that LaMelo Ball obviously done for the rest of the season. And, you know, just a superstar in the league, and it's sad news. The game's just better when it stars are playing. But there's still about 20 games left in the regular season, so Charlotte's going to have to make do here without LaMelo for the rest of the season. And obviously that means Terry Rozier will probably pop in a lot of models, and for good reason. He typically gets a usage bump. Gordon Hayward, I call him Gordon Hayward, who always lets me down because he always seems to let me down. He will probably project pretty well as well. He did against Phoenix, and he was terrible, but Orlando is not Phoenix, so maybe you're into Gordon Hayward. Dennis Smith is still fairly priced. And, of course, Kelly Oubre came back from injury this week. And we're also dealing with P.J. Washington, who is doubtful. So talk to me here. You think Rozier will carry some decent ownership on Friday?
Yeah, I think he probably will. He is priced up here on DraftKings more than he was the other day in this spot. He was 7,300, I believe, 7,200. Game before that, he was all the way down to 6,800. And now he's up here to 7,700. So he is priced more appropriately, but I still think he is a very good play. Hayward's a strong play. I think Mark Williams is fine. Dennis Smith Jr. is a strong play. But I think my favorite here might end up just being Kelly Oubre, just based on popped in and played 38 minutes in the starting lineup without LaMelo Ball. And if he's going to be playing 36 plus minutes, that 6,600 price tag is just a little bit too cheap for him.
I agree. This is not the same matchup Charlotte had a couple of days ago. Orlando, less resistance defensively, play at a little bit of a faster pace as well. So I think these Hornets are in a much better spot than they were. I don't have a total on that game yet, but I'm looking at scores and odds, and it looks like it opened at a 3.5-point spread, so it might be pretty competitive here. As Orlando's gotten healthier toward the end of the season, it's a little more difficult to want to target some of these players whose prices are up a little bit. You got any interest in anybody from Orlando specifically, or you just kind of like, would you just run them as run backs kind of thing?
More so as run backs, but there are a few of these guys that do interest me individually. Paolo Banchero, this is a very strong matchup for him. He's been starting to pick it up a little bit lately, more so just for one game. He had a 34-minute game against the Pelicans where he put up almost 50 fantasy points, but he's still showing the spark every now and then, and this is a very strong matchup against Charlotte. A $6,400 Wendell Carter Jr., that's a great price tag for him. He's got a very high ceiling. He's shown a low minutes floor lately, but it's also so rare that Orlando's in good close games, and so I think Carter Jr. has a high ceiling. Fultz is in play. Wagner's got a good matchup, although I never really like playing Franz Wagner. He's typically a guy I just X out of my pool, if I'm being honest. You can always build a rule. I don't like Xing these guys out of my lineup because they all have ceilings, but build a rule that you play max one of Jalen Suggs, Cole Anthony, and Markel Fultz, and then I think you could keep all three of those point guards in your pool. And then I don't think it's ridiculous to even... No, never mind. It's a 10-game slate. I was just thinking because of how good of a matchup it is, you can maybe take a shot on somebody like a Mo Wagner, but it's a 10-game slate.
You don't need anything like that. On both sides of your head. No, it's ridiculous. I was going to say if this was a 4-game slate, we'd be talking Jalen Suggs, but since there's 10 games and more consistent value, you know, if you're playing 150, you want to throw Jalen Suggs in somewhere in case he produces, like, you know, 1.5 points a minute against Charlotte. I get it. Markel Fultz, probably a high floor cash game play. He's hit 6 times value on FanDuel in 2 of his last 5 games. He's hit 5 times or more in 4 of the last 5 games, and it's a good matchup against Charlotte. But again, like, I understand Fultz for cash games for sure, but we need ceiling on a 10-game slate. So outside of Paolo and Wendell Carter, I'm probably out on the rest of the Magic. But yeah, we definitely have to consider some of these corners, especially TJ Watson doesn't play. I like your call on Kelly Oubre. You know, he really, the leash came off when we saw 38 minutes out of him. So I like the Oubre call quite a bit. Brooklyn and Boston is one of 2 7:30 games as we're moving right along here. I don't even know if I introduced myself at the top of the show. I said TJ Zorsh. I don't remember if I said my own name, but clearly I'm not Stevie. I don't know if I said I'm the Looch or not, but hello. Hello, world. Now that we're a game through and I decided to potentially intro myself for the first time, because honestly, I don't remember, and it's been a long day. But Mikal Bridges has been pretty damn good as a Brooklyn Net. Tough matchup against Boston. Looks like we're going to see Ben Simmons. Just kidding. He's out for the rest of the year, most likely, at this rate. So regardless here, can you target anybody on Brooklyn against Boston, TJ? That's my question.
Mikal Bridges definitely still has the ceiling. I don't think I have a need to get to somebody like Spencer Dinwiddie. Nick Claxton's got the ceiling as well, but I think the player that I'm most interested in is Cameron Johnson. He's just been playing great, playing around 30-ish minutes, shooting the lights out lately. Like, obviously, we're not going to expect him to shoot 7 for 11 from 3 like he did last game, but he's still been just shooting the ball great lately. And in his last 3 games with the Brooklyn Nets, 39.7 fantasy points, 36, 40.5. And his price isn't going up. He's still at 5,500. So I think Cam Johnson is a strong play. If you think Brooklyn's going to get blown out, maybe you include somebody like a Cam Thomas in your pool. I think he has a ceiling. But these are just tournament sprinkles if you're playing lots of lineups.
Yeah, I agree. Cam has to be really efficient because they're just not playing him more than 30 minutes. He's getting his shots up when he's in. And maybe I'm just a little salty because I chase his points props on the wrong days. It's the same research. And his prop lines are opening around the same number pretty typically, but I chased him on the days over the last 10 days that he missed, and I didn't play him on the days that he made, obviously. But he's a guy who loves to shoot the three ball, and I like that as well. Jason Tatum, like, on a 10-game slate, this man just comes in under-owned slate after slate after slate. It really does seem like him and Donovan Mitchell had a pissing match the other night, and they both went off, and Tatum dropped like a 60-bomb. You know, this is a slate that has Jokic, it has Lillard, it has Ja Morant, it has Sabonis. Maybe Jason Tatum won't get the ownership he deserves. I guess the biggest concern here is, like, can Brooklyn keep this thing competitive, right? If you're, like, kicking the tires on Tatum. I don't know. Like, do we have to spend a lot of time on this Boston team because they're all healthy? Tatum is always in play. Jaylen Brown's always in play. You and I will probably agree that we don't play them in the same lineup together, but we like having exposure to them. And, you know, Bobby Williams, the Time Lord, he always has massive block upside. He's always a tournament threat as well.
Yeah, 100%. Rob Williams is too cheap. Derek White, Marcus Smart, Malcolm Brogdon, I don't think I need to get to any of these guys when everyone is healthy. I like one of them to be out before I get to the other two. Jaylen Brown at 8,700, he's definitely going to be in the pool. Jason Tatum, it's like you said, he's probably going to be 5% owned, so I'll try and get 10% of him.
Makes sense. Should we move on to Portland and Atlanta? Could be some fireworks there.
Yeah, let's do it because we once again, Stevie's not here. We get to do this however we want. I'm going to transition this. Once again, we have Anthony Simons out. And with Anthony Simons out, guess what? There's still no use of Nurkic. Josh Hart has been traded away. Justice Winslow is injured. It's Dame season once again. I know DeJounte Murray is a good defender, but Trae Young, not so much. It's Dame time, Looch.
Yeah, I like Dame quite a bit. Matisse Thybulle could be some value. He's played over 35 minutes in two of the last three games. If Simons is in fact out, which that's what it's looking like, I think he's a good tournament play as well. Jeremy Grant is still fairly priced. We're still kind of waiting on a ceiling game, but he has a really, really high floor, especially without Simons. I do think he has 45 to 50 point upside. Now, would I play Jeremy Grant and Lillard together? I don't know because, you know, Lillard, his price is definitely up there, as is Grant's, but they're both warranted. So I think there's, you know, reasons to have exposure to both of these guys for sure. On the other side, Trae Young does have a questionable tag, but it looks like he's more toward probable. He's under 10K here. I don't hate the idea of looking at some Trae Young as well. DeJounte Murray, 7,900, played one game against Portland this season and was pushing 70 DraftKings points. If you're you know, following along at home here, I don't know. I'm not expecting 60 out of Murray, but I do kind of like the idea of having some run backs with Trae Young in my lineups here. And, you know, just surprising to see the production drop off of John Collins. I feel like he's been in trade rumors for 2.5 years and they keep holding on to him. And I don't know what his role is, but it's weird to see John Collins at 4,600. Clint Capella is pretty cheap, man. He's coming off a game where he played 35 stinking minutes. So per dollar, Clint Capella is extremely appealing here in this matchup.
I want to touch on a couple Portland things really quick. Just still, I think Cam Reddish at 4,300 is one of the better value plays on the slate with Simons out. Last game with Simons out, Shaedon Sharpe played 31 minutes off of the bench. And so a $3,500 Sharpe, I think, is very much going to be in play as well, in addition to Thybulle on the wing there for some salary relief. And then on the Atlanta side, it's so tempting to hit the lock button and play 150 lineups with Clint Capella in 150 of them, because if we're getting 30 plus minute Clint Capella, he's a 7,500, 8K player at minimum, right? Like at bare minimum. There have been times in the past where Clint Capella was getting 30 plus minutes where he was a 9K player. He is $5,600. And in Quinn Snyder's first game as head coach, he played 35 minutes. Now, 116, 119. Was this an overtime game?
I don't believe so, but I love the Quinn Snyder angle here because the 35 plus minutes hasn't happened much this season. I think three or four times. And then the following game after that, he played like, you know, 29, 28, 30 minutes, something like that. So there's really no rhyme or reason behind that. But the fact that there's a new head coach, potentially some minor tweaks to this rotation, I like where your head's at here. I think we're going to see at least 32 minutes out of Clint Capela if the game's competitive here. I think, you know, he wants to see what he's got in his center that, you know, really wasn't. He was more or less, I guess, not in the corner of the former coaching staff that was there. So we know what Capela could do, TJ. You're absolutely right. I don't know if I'd lock him into 150. I just, man, 150 and Clint Capela, they just don't go good in the same sentence. But I understand.
I agree with you. It would definitely be a tournament stand as opposed to like a this is the right thing to do. It'd be more so like a, I hope not enough people have noticed what happened with Clint Capela last game. And so I'm just going to try and take a big stand. We didn't know about Tyrese Halliburton last night before lock. And I still started my lineups with 100% McConnell. So I like to take stands like that on occasion in tournaments. Trey Young is a good play in addition. He's got a huge ceiling. DeJounte Murray is underpriced. I like him as a run back. But that's about it for this one. It's mostly Portland other than those three guys, and especially Capela, like maybe some Sadiq Bey or something like that, because he's 4,200, but it's mostly those three for me.
Atlanta, exactly 500, the current 8 seed in the East, and the East is really jumbled together, especially at the bottom here. So, you know that Atlanta wants to do his thing and kind of jockey for position here. So we'll see what Snyder and company can do here with the Hawks the rest of the way. And I think you made a really good point on Cam Reddish. It would be tough to play more than one of Reddish, Thibault, and Sharp together in like large field stuff. Like I wouldn't mind having a couple of builds where I maybe have two of the three, but I want it to be like a game stack with 10 games. You know, maybe just be careful with your build rules and maybe just play one of them more oftentimes than not. But, you know, good game environment. It should be fairly competitive. I think it's like a 7-point spread. And you know what? Since there's no rules today, I'll let you transition it again over to Phoenix and Chicago if you'd like.
I said to myself, Kevin Durant is now a Phoenix Sun. I don't have to pay attention to this team when they're all playing. That's what I said, Luch, but I was wrong. We got the Phoenix Suns at the Chicago Bulls. And last game in Kevin Durant's first start with the Phoenix Suns, Devin Booker played 33 minutes, shot 15 for 26 from the field. You heard that right. 26 shot attempts still. He had 6 rebounds, 7 assists, 2 blocks on his way en route to 60 fantasy points. It turns out that this may have just opened the floor up for Devin Booker, and we may get to see a little bit of a rejuvenation in his game a little bit now. Let's start with the Phoenix Suns. Durant's still not going to play enough minutes for me. Chris Paul, I think, might be the odd man out here, but DeAndre Ayton and Devin Booker are two guys that I am still somewhat interested in for tournaments against this poor defensive Chicago Bulls team.
Devin Booker took 26 shots in Kevin Durant's debut, which is pretty crazy. Chicago's kind of a mess. It's almost like, you know, narrative-y wise, like Devin Booker wanted to show Durant why he should stay in Phoenix, why he came to Phoenix, right? Mm-hmm. Like, no distractions here. We're gonna ball out, and Booker did. And 9K is a fair price. Yeah, I had the same theory as you did. Like, I don't want to touch these guys at their prices, but in my head, it's like maybe Chris Paul's the biggest loser because his in this situation for fantasy output, because his scoring is definitely going to be capped now, I would think, right? There's just too many.
The other thing, too, that I think is very interesting to consider is like, yes, you add a star to a team. That's obviously, in theory, in a vacuum, going to decrease usage for individual players. But the efficiency should go up a lot for Devin Booker. And there's no more Cameron Johnson. There's no more Mikal Bridges. And so when you have Kevin Durant on a minutes limit, when you're getting 27 minutes to 28 minutes of Kevin Durant, that probably means you're getting a good at least fit. Like, they're going to stagger Booker and Durant now because they don't have all these other guys. They don't have the depth that they used to have. And so that means you're probably getting a legit 18 minutes where Devin Booker is probably going to have a 40% usage rate. And he's just going to go out there and chuck the entire time that Kevin Durant is off the court. And then when he's on, he's probably going to have a much better efficiency because Kevin Durant's on the court. He's not getting double teamed anymore. And so I do think Devin Booker makes for a very interesting tournament play. I think I'm going to buy into this a little bit.
And Devin Booker had just a ridiculous opening quarter of the game against Charlotte. But in the second quarter, what if I told you Durant and Booker didn't share the floor at all? In the second quarter,
oh, I love that.
Kevin Durant played about 7 minutes and Booker played 5 minutes. They split the quarter exactly. And obviously with Durant on his minutes limit, Durant started the game alongside of Booker, played about almost 6 minutes, and Booker played 11 minutes. So there was 5 minutes in the first quarter that Booker had to himself and another 5 in the, so 10 minutes in the first half where he was the alpha still. So that will drop off as Durant's restrictions come off slowly, right? I mean, it just has to, but it's kind of like the Josh Giddey SGA thing. They stagger as well when they're both active here. So I like where your head's at here. Booker is the guy to get up his shots, and who's going to play Devin Booker? I don't mean that in the sense that no one's going to own him. I'm ultimately just curious here because
I hope we end up getting like a 5% Devin Booker on a 10 game slate. So I can just put in a nice 15 to 20% ride 3 to 4x on the field. And just that doesn't kill me if he has a poor game, and that's going to feel really good if he does something similar to last week. On the Chicago side, Vucevic, LaVine, and DeRozan, they're all in the lineup, and that kind of means for me all of them are fine, but I don't really have much interest in any of them.
I just – DeMar DeRozan's usage has really plateaued, and LaVine has really picked it up. LaVine was working on one of those games at the park stat lines. He had 39-0-0 going into like 3 minutes left in the fourth, and I really wanted him to have that. Did not do anything but score game. Screw everybody. I'm not going to rebound. I'm not going to pass. But he's really taken the reins and picked up the usage that, for whatever reason, DeRozan's kind of just like left on the table. I mean, we were seeing DeRozan shoot 25, 30 times a game earlier this season. And in the month of February, he only had 20 shot attempts once. That's just kind of mind-blowing. So I am more pro LaVine at this point than DeRozan. I have a little bit of an issue paying $8,400 for LaVine on a 10-game slate against Phoenix. He's gone off recently in a couple of games, but they're all really cupcake matchups. 48 against Detroit, DK points. Then he had 44 against Brooklyn in 28 minutes. And, of course, Indiana, he had 63. Man, he had the elusive 41-1-0 stat line. He was so close. But it's just a hefty price tag on this slate. What are your thoughts on playing anybody on Chicago here, at least the studs?
I agree with you there. And, like, you could even consider the Patrick Beverleys and the Alex Caruso's as some value. But Beverly went off last game, and I kind of feel like that's going to be point chasing a little bit. So I don't feel necessarily the need to try and go back to that. Before we push this to the next game, I know, like, people know this is the morning grind, but people know we record this the night before. As we're talking, I do think it's pretty interesting to note that Kyrie and Luka seem to be having their first game of, yeah, this is why we made the trade. Luka's got 42 points right now. Kyrie's got 38 points right now. They might have dueling 40-point games here in what looks like it'll be a victory against the 76ers. So very interesting stuff to see the two of them finally mesh in a little bit. Next game, we got the New York Knicks and the Miami Heat. The Knicks aren't what the Knicks really used to be, right? We're so used to this team having a starting lineup where all of these guys play 36 minutes here, Luch. And now they added Josh Hart, and that doesn't really happen anymore. What do you think about the New York Knicks today?
No, it doesn't really happen except for one Jalen Brunson. His usage definitely will take a hit. He's going to have to be really efficient. with the addition of Josh Hart to keep paying off this price tag. And he was against Brooklyn, 36 minutes, 15 of 18 from the floor. So that'll do the trick. But, you know, in RJ Barrett, who just loves chucking the ball whenever he's in, and he doesn't really, you know, clip more than 30 minutes anymore, which is probably better for the Knicks in real life at this rate. But it's really...
How dare tough. You, Luch?
Listen, it's tough to play Julius Randle at 9,700 with the addition of Josh Hart. But I'm still okay with playing Brunson. But in this game against Miami, I don't think I'm playing anybody on the Knicks.
How dare you talk that way about the, like, fifth best Canadian basketball player in the world? Can we take a second to appreciate that? That we're not old guys, Luch. Like, we're not old guys by any means. And when we were kids, you wouldn't have been able to name more than five total Canadian basketball players. Rick Fox and Sam D'Alembert and Todd McCullough and, of course, Steve Nash. I was building to that, but I was going by era. You know, I was starting a little bit further. Yeah.
I can name three more, I think. Maybe two. Andrew Wiggins.
There's no way you can only name three Canadian NBA players right now.
I have to keep track of 50 states, TJ. Have you ever tried to keep track of 50 states? I don't know how many
probably name more. I could probably name more of the states than you.
I don't know. Geography was one of the only classes I didn't sleep in back in the day. So, I don't know. Wasn't Jamal McGlure Canadian? Do you remember that?
Jamal McGlure is Canadian, yeah.
Boom! I know my Canadians. I do.
Look, the Canadians are not very far away from meddling at one of these next Olympics. We got SGA, we got Jamal Murray, we got Andrew Wiggins, RJ Barrett. So many great players now. I feel like one of few countries that will be like cutting NBA players from their team.
Corey Joseph's Canadian.
Kelly Olynyk, Tristan Thompson. Dwight so Powell. Many young guys too. Dwight Powell.
I didn't see that coming.
Brandon Clark. Dylan Brooks.
Oh, I forgot about my favorite player, Chris Boucher,
exactly. The slim duck. But let's talk about the Miami side of this game, because right now, obviously, Kyle Lowry is still out. Jimmy Butler's questionable after his revenge games against Philly. If Butler plays, I don't know how much interest I have in this team. You know, Tyler Herro is starting to get a little bit too cheap, but he's played pretty terrible the last couple games. He's shot like absolute crap, though. That can turn around at any time. If Jimmy's in, it's maybe some sprinkles of guys like Herro for me. But if Jimmy's out, fire up some Bam, fire up a lot of Herro, even Kevin Love and Max Strus, Gabe Vincent, Victor Oladipo, Caleb Martin. I'll be playing all of these guys.
Yeah, Tyler Herro will give you a really nice floor-ceiling combo. Bam is starting to get to that too-cheap territory. Of course, with everyone healthy, it's tough to figure out what's going to happen. But Bam and Tyler Herro, despite probably a fairly low game total here, the Knicks play good defense. They play pretty slow. Well, they play above-average defense and play pretty slow. I like Bam. I like Herro if Jimmy Butler is out. If Jimmy Butler plays, then I will not have much exposure from this game at all.
Although I still maybe consider a little bit of Tyler Herro just because he's 7,300. And then also Kevin Love, because you look at this Knicks front court, they have Mitch Robinson and Julius Randle in the starting lineup. So that makes sense for Kevin Love to keep getting extended minutes at that power forward position. If the Knicks are going to be running double big, they probably put Bam Adebayo guarding Julius Randle because he's such a strong defender, and have Kevin Love inside trying to keep Mitch Robinson far away from the hoop. So that's kind of how I'm picturing them doing that here. So I can see some extended minutes for Kevin Love as well.
Yeah. Let's move on. What do you think? Utah OKC?
I feel like this game has been played 8 times in the last 2 weeks.
Right? I feel like we're in a simulation. But how is this happening? Jordan Clarkson and Sexton are both out. Mike Conley's gone. Is it Chris Dunn season, my friend?
Look, if everybody's like, oh, he only had 20 fantasy points last game and he was mega chalk, I don't want to play him. Give me all the Chris Dunn. Run it back. I'm still going to be playing a ton of this dude now on a 10-game slate. He's been priced up to 4,300 with Jordan Clarkson and Colin Sexton still out. Don't get me wrong, I'm going to get a ton of him, but I'm not going to be hitting the lock button like I was the other day when he was 3,600. 43 just gives him a lot more ability to fail. We basically saw a floor game from him last game at 3,600, and it's fine. He didn't burn your lineups by any means. He's 6X'd. And so I'm still going to be getting some Chris Dunn. Kelly Olynyk, I don't mind. Walker Kessler has a big ceiling. The rest of these guys are just starting to get to the point that they're appropriately priced, though. Lauri Markkanen does have a 60-point ceiling, and so you can play him, but he's also $9,600 now. He might still be cheaper over there on FanDuel, so if he is, you can play him over there. But Talen Horton-Tucker up to $6,400. Yeah, he's a fine play, but all of a sudden the ceiling isn't quite there as much when he's $6,400. So still some strong plays on this team. I'm going to get to a lot of Chris Dunn, but they aren't quite at the level of, yeah, I want to play two to three Jazz players in every lineup like I had a couple times over the last week.
I'm with you. And for OKC, we didn't know if we could trust them. They kind of, about 2 games ago, they were getting beat pretty good, and they kind of played 10 guys, like 20-plus minutes. And then they went out there, ran Jalen Williams a lot, ran Josh Giddey 34 minutes, and, you know, it's your glass half full or half empty. Gotta love the game environment and the pace of this one. The NBA DFS, where you target a lot of below average players in a positive game environment, it's never fun. A little bit painful here, but you have to have interest in a lot of these Thunders. I mean, Lu Dort played 36 minutes. He's 5,500. Isaiah Joe's still cheap enough where you could keep, you know, play him. But, you know, Giddey makes sense. Jalen Williams is here to be fantasy relevant for the rest of the season, most likely. Poku is still out. Kenrick Williams going to miss the rest of the season. So that's definitely going to assure some playing time for these wings here on OKC. I really wish they'd free my guy Dario Saric, who had 13 real points in 15 minutes. Couldn't get any extra burn against the Lakers. But he's like a large field tournament play for value, I think, too. Robinson Earl is such a trap 9 times out of 10, right? He got the start, took 2 freaking shots against the Lakers. That's it. But that's what he's going to do. He'll shoot the ball, you know, no more than 5 times on average, maybe. And you better hope for some blocks in an outlier rebound game. So just be wary of Robinson Earl. I don't get that guy right ever because he's oftentimes not right.
That's true. He's very rarely the right thing to play. I think Jalen with an I and Dario Saric are, you can keep him in the 150 max pool. Isaiah Joe came off the bench last game, but still ended up playing more minutes than he had in the previous 2 before that. So he's definitely still in the pool, but Lu Dort at 5,500 is probably my second favorite play behind Jalen with an E, who has just been playing some unbelievable basketball lately. Keep firing up all the Jalen Williams, especially in this matchup against Utah. Like, I think he's a cash game play and a tournament play. Josh Giddey finally showed us who Josh Giddey was again last game. 34 minutes, almost 50 fantasy points. He has too big of a ceiling for you to not get to if you're playing multiple lineups. If you're playing 3, I think I have him in 1. If I'm playing 150, I'm having at least 20% Josh Giddey. Yes, there's a low floor with the minutes, but his ceiling is just so, so high for that price.
Out of all the games we've covered so far, Giddey stands out as the obvious cash game, like, necessity. As of right now, I feel like at his price. What do you think? Is he a necessity for cash, or, like, or am I off here?
We'll see. I think kind of how this slate shakes out. Like, I think we're going to be wanting to go to a lot of Portland. We'll be going to some Chicago. I'd rank Jalen Williams ahead of Josh Giddey right now, I think.
I like them both.
I do too. I like them both a lot. But I honestly might even have Giddey kind of ranked 3rd behind Jalen Williams, Lu Dort, and then Giddey. But I think all 3 of them are great plays.
Yeah, I agree. And I think someone from Charlotte, Rozier or Oubre or both, would probably carry a lot of ownership.
Or so. Dennis. Oh, yeah. Ownership. Sorry. I should have let you finish. Give me a cutoff score.
No, you're right. But I think Charlotte, OKC, you're probably going to end up looking there, which is, you know, nothing says late season NBA like looking for OKC and Charlotte for cash gameplays.
It's ugly. I know we don't want to like it, but this is where I make the most of my money. And so I love this stuff.
Well, do you love
Ja? I thrive in the chaos, man. I had 60% Jeremy Sochan Thursday night. And as we speak, it's the early third quarter. He's got 18, 10, 3. Life's good right now. TJ McConnell in 100% of lineups. 10x on Chris Duarte. We're feeling pretty good. Just need Andrew Nembhard.
What do you think about Ja and Jokic tomorrow at 10 o'clock? We got four 10 o'clock Eastern games here. So let's hope for no crazy news. But you got Ja, Desmond Bane and company heading to Mile High in Denver. And we got Aaron Gordon is probable. Michael Porter Jr. is probable, despite their questionable tags. You know, well, what do we have to say about Jokic? I mean, do we have to say anything about Jokic? I don't know. Jamal Murray's had a couple of really nice games in February. He's got two games of 50-plus DK points. And, yeah, he's a very interesting large field tournament play, is Jamal Murray. I know I kind of covered, you know, both grounds here, but really what else is there to say? I mean, we know if these teams are healthy, we know who they are. Ja is in play. Desmond Bain and Jackson are probably tournament plays on this big slate. And Jokic, you know, he could break any slate. Guy has 100-point upside. It's ridiculous.
He absolutely busted the last time against Memphis when they got blown out, but I don't think we can expect that to happen too often. I think Nikola Jokic is probably my second favorite spend up on the slate right now to this point, besides behind Dame. I mean, obviously, we're going to get to the Los Angeles Lakers later, and so Anthony Davis, I think, kind of is a step above those two for me, at least a step above Jokic on this slate. But at least out of the ones we've talked about so far, Jokic is my second favorite of the group. Jamal Murray, Aaron Gordon, both of these guys I think are interesting for tournaments. Jamal Murray is, I think, a very strong tournament play. 7,800 is just a little bit too cheap from him, but it's mostly going to be Memphis and Denver. It's mostly going to be Jokic I want to play in this game.
Yeah, I'm with you. The studs here. I want to play the studs in tournaments unless some crazy news opens up. That's pretty much it. Shall we move on to New Orleans and Golden State?
Yeah, let's do it. I like it. I mean, on this Memphis side, like Desmond Bain is interesting. Xavier Tillman, I think, is still too cheap. I'm somewhat interested in getting to Xavier Tillman, but nobody that I'm just like, and Dylan Brooks, 4,200.
What about Canadian Brandon Clark?
If he starts over Xavier Tillman, because he started the second half last game, just sub everything I said about Xavier Tillman for Brandon Clark. But with this game being a 10 o'clock game, I think that's kind of what you do is you play a little bit Xavier Tillman. And then if Clark is in the starting lineup, you just make that swap one for one.
Yeah. You know, if you leave $100 on the table, you can do either or really. Well, I guess you can go right from Tillman to Clark. You're right. You nailed it. Sorry, it's late. Leave me alone. Golden State's on the second leg of a back-to-back. Will they sit any of their veterans? I don't know. Maybe they will. They have a TNT game on Thursday, so you know they got to keep Clay and Draymond active. They don't want to open up the wallet here. But maybe they sit against New Orleans. I don't know. So maybe there's some Golden State value that will open up on Friday. Who knows? I mean, let's just assume that they're active here. But we'll start with the New Orleans side. Valanciunas considered doubtful. At least we're getting that news ahead of time. Hernan Gomez up to 4,300, only played 21 minutes, got off to a really poor start on Wednesday. But we know that this guy, Hernan Gomez, has elite point per minute upside. So we'll see. Brandon Ingram, if Valanciunas is out, again, we saw what he could do. We know the usage bump without Valanciunas and Zion is like 4%, I think, which is a pretty nice number. So I think this game could be really sneaky for tournaments. CJ McCollum also coming off a nice game here. I like Brandon Ingram. I like Hernan Gomez, despite not really lighting the world on fire on Wednesday. We've seen him drop like 40-plus on multiple occasions. So I'm definitely interested in some of these Pelicans.
Yeah, this Pelicans team kind of fits right in that same group of teams like the Lakers, who we will talk about, Portland players, Charlotte, Utah, OKC, where we just kind of want to make sure we're going out of our way to check this game and try and get exposure to it. Brandon Ingram is such a phenomenal play. I'm going to make sure I have one of Guillermo Hernan Gomez and Jackson Hayes in probably every single one of my lineups. A $3,400 Najee Marshall, who played 27 minutes last game, I think is worth consideration. CJ McCollum, maybe, sure. I don't think I need to get to a guy like Josh Richardson, but Brandon Ingram and then these bigs are really just where I want to get to on this Golden State side. And like you mentioned this earlier, hopefully when you and I are on the FanDuel Friday show together, we'll have a little more clarity on the injury report. But we know Steph Curry's out. We know Andrew Wiggins is out. This is a back-to-back for Golden State. But as we speak, their game hasn't even started yet. So we don't know who's going to be playing lots of minutes in that one. If everyone plays, I think Klay Thompson and Jordan Poole and Draymond Green and Dante DiVincenzo, they're all fine, but it's a 10-game slate, so I don't know how big of targets they are. If Draymond Green is out, Kevon Looney, Jonathan Kuminga, and Anthony Lamb will all be really great plays. If Klay Thompson is out, bump up Jordan Poole even more, bump up Dante DiVincenzo even more, and throw Ty Jerome into your pool as well. I think that's basically it.
Yeah, you pretty much nailed it. I don't really have much to add about that game. Clay's always going to be a good tournament play at that price. It just gets to the point where you need him to drop like 35 real points to hit a ceiling. So I'm with you. We have two more games left, making pretty good time here. Speaking of second leg of a back-to-back and resting your veterans, it is the Clippers, who are playing the Warriors on Thursday, and the Clippers will travel to Sacramento on Friday. And the last time these two teams played, there was a billion points. Did you know that?
The second highest scoring game in NBA history, and it's not even like this one was quad overtime or anything. It was only double. It was a measly two overtimes.
I also read reports that the same day or night, don't quote me on this, quick Google search will probably be warranted, but the Clippers plane got struck by lightning either on the way to that game or after that game.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, I think it was a clip. Hold on. I got to look it up. Talk to me about this game while I verify that.
Another one like the Golden State Warriors, that because their game hasn't started yet as we speak, and this is a back-to-back, we don't know the status of Paul George. We don't know the status of Kawhi Leonard. We don't know the status of Russell Westbrook. Ivica Zubac and Marcus Morris Senior, both sat out the first game of the back-to-back, so maybe they play in the second one. If you get Russell Westbrook out, Trey Mann becomes interesting. Bones Highland at 3K flat becomes very, very interesting. I think if we happen to get something like a Russell Westbrook out, I would probably set a rule that I'd want one of Mann, Norman Powell, and Bones Highland, at least one or two of them in every single one of my lineups. But we're probably not going to know that. We may, because it's a back-to-back, so these guys may just be out on the initial injury report. But if we get some BS where they're questionable, you're just going to have to be taking some stands in tournaments. Like, because of this matchup, Kawhi, Paul George, Westbrook, even a guy like Norm Powell, like, these are all Zubac if he plays. These are all good plays if they play. If one of Kawhi or George sits, the other one is probably one of the very top plays on the slate. But we don't know that right now, and we may not know that in time. So just all things to keep in mind. If one of George or Leonard sits, the other one's one of the top plays on the slate. Same thing if one of them sits, bump up Westbrook, bump up Powell. If you get Westbrook sitting, bump up Mann and Bones Highland. That's just kind of how this is going to shake out.
Yeah. Noteworthy that Zubac didn't play on Thursday. And yeah, Clippers playing struck by lightning ahead of overtime loss to Nuggets. Yahoo Sports article. So sandwiched between two overtime games, they're playing get struck by lightning. Yeah, that's pretty freaking terrifying, man. Glad all is well there. But that's
on the other side of this one, like, I got burned so bad playing a bunch of Malik Monk the other night, and then he just barely played. Like, he played less minutes with De'Aaron Fox out than he usually plays with De'Aaron Fox in. Fox was out, and then they ran all of their starters basically for like 34 plus minutes. So that was an L I took. It sounds like Fox is going to play in this one. So that downgrades a guy like Sabonis a little bit for me. But De'Aaron Fox has just been absolutely cooking in games he's played lately. Obviously, as a left-handed player, we're a little bit wary playing a guy who's coming off of a left wrist injury, but I'm not too worried about it. He's probably going to be super low-owned, and therefore I'm going to want to be coming in overweight on him. Guys like Herter, Barnes, Murray, I think you can take shots on them in 150, but I'm not super excited about it.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with Fox. Just, you know, I don't know what they're going to do with their rotation, really. Wish Terrence Davis was more of a factor. If by some freak chance he gets a spot start, if Fox actually doesn't play, Terrence Davis is one of those guys that if I see he's in the starting lineup, I have no problem lock buttoning Terrence Davis on some nights for tournaments. But we'll see. We'll see. Kawhi's been playing some elite basketball. He really has. Outside of that outlier floor game against Phoenix before the All-Star break, dare I say Kawhi's been all the way back for the most part, playing a ton of minutes. That's the big thing. There's no phantom restriction on him right now.
This last little bit, he has really looked like Raptors Kawhi again. And in the first half of the first quarter in this game that just started, he only has 2 rebounds, nothing else. So that's not what I like to see, Kawhi. You're on my best GPP team right now. But let's go into this last game of the slate, because we got Minnesota and the Lakers, and there's some pretty interesting plays in this one. Late night hammer, the sole game at 10:30 Eastern time. On the Minnesota side of things, Anthony Edwards at 9,400, I think, is a guy that I always want to keep in my pool and get overweight on every single night. He's been shooting poorly the last two games, but he's playing 40 minutes a game almost. He's jacking up shots as long as he's not in a double team. Anthony Edwards, I think, is a great tournament play. Rudy Gobert is too cheap at $7,400. He's been playing some better basketball lately. And then Kyle Anderson, is somewhat interesting to get to in tournaments as well.
Yeah, I agree. Anthony Edwards kind of on a little bit of a rough stretch here, but you know he's going to get his. The usage is going to be high. And it doesn't matter really who's in for the Lakers. They're going to push the ball for the most part. And I love the pace. You know, if there is a high-paced game on the slate, this is definitely one of them. So I like Anthony Edwards. I think you'll probably get decent ownership on him. Maybe. I mean, like, last game of the night, kind of not playing extremely well. So I like the Anthony Edwards call quite a bit. I have extreme interest in Anthony Davis, which is always terrifying to invest in. He's one tummy ache away from hitting the locker room every damn game, right? But I don't care if it's Rudy Gobert or Wilt Chamberlain or whoever on the other side. There's no LeBron. There's no Westbrook. And it should be, in theory, all the usage Anthony Davis can handle.
Agreed. I love Anthony Davis tonight. I think he's going to be, just because of the discount he has over, like, on Jokic and Lillard, I think he's going to be my favorite spend up on the slate. And then this Lakers team, like, that's another team that I'm going to make sure I have at least one Laker on every single one of my teams this on Friday night, no matter how many lineups I play, because you got Anthony Davis as a spend up, but you got Dennis Schroeder. Vanderbilt's a guy who's priced up now and has been disappointing, so he's not anybody I feel like I need to get to very much of at that price. But Malik Beasley and Dennis Schroeder I really like, alongside, of course, Anthony Davis. And then even somebody like Austin Reeves, I'll get into a little bit of my lineups because he's been playing some really good basketball lately as well.
Yeah, I like Schroeder for tournaments. You know, he's got that little questionable tag. You know, Anthony Davis is probable. Some people might be hesitant to play him, but Minnesota likes to get up and down too. Someone's still got to run the pick and roll with Anthony Davis every other possession, and it's going to be Dennis Schroeder when he's on the court. So I think both of those guys are super interesting. And
doesn't Malik Beasley just feel like the type of guy that's going to shoot 20-plus shots against his old team?
Yeah, because you know it's not going to be Vanderbilt with Davis back.
Exactly.
It does.
If you obviously, it's not D'Angelo Russell because he is going to be on the bench in street clothes.
You know, it just, you're right. It feels like one of these sidecar pieces from LA and this high tempo game can be optimal in large field tournaments at like 3%, right? Like maybe Lonnie Walker plays another 20 minutes and that's 25 DK points. Maybe it's the right build. Maybe small forward's ugly and, you know, he makes the build work. Or maybe Troy Brown starts. He probably won't. But it does feel like Beasley is just going to No analytic approach here. No data to go off of. Just gut call Malik Beasley. I like that for tournaments.
Straight gut feeling. I love it. What do you think, Luch? We've almost been on for an hour. We don't remember the rules of the morning grind game. Is it just time to get out of here?
I think it's time. But now that we covered the whole slate, I'll ask you one thing. Do you still feel like locking Clint Capella into 150 lineups?
I don't think that is a good idea, no, because we got too many other centers we want to pay up for. But I can tell you I'll definitely be overweight on Clint Capella.
I like that call. I'd take a lot of Capella as well. But if you want to hear some of our thoughts kind of post-morning shoot around, if there's any news, check us out on the FanDuel Friday show. We're going to head out of here. We will talk to you again Friday afternoon for TJ's Awards. I am Justin Carlucci. Thanks for tuning in and have a good weekend, everybody.